Well, good morning. I am so grateful for the opportunity to come up here and give the message, a message about what it is to be vulnerable. For those of you who don't know me, I grew up in the small town of Twisp. It's about 100 miles north of here. I'm a child of the 80s. I grew up listening to music like Rush and U2 and Van Halen. And watching movies like Stand By Me and Goonies. I just love that stuff. The 80s is great. Anyway, I grew up in a log home out on a ranch with four siblings. There's my the oldest is my sister Pam, and then my older brother Jim, and then me, and then my younger brother Andy, and my youngest half-brother, Brett, who a lot of you know here at church. That's a picture of me and Andy when we were kids. Funny thing, so Brett hadn't even been born yet when that picture was taken. And my parents, when they would go out, they'd leave Jim, my older brother, to watch Andy and I. And let me just say, that was not his most favorite thing to do. His two little annoying brothers, but oh my gosh, we were so excited when he was watching us, because we were like, oh, we get to play with our older brother Jim. This is going to be fantastic. And to make the most of it, what he would do is he'd say, okay, hey, let's play Cowboys and Indians, and you guys can be the Indians. And Andy and I'd be like, yeah, this is great. Okay, all right, great. What do we do? And he'd get out either some rope or some duct tape, and he'd tie us up to a tree or a staircase, and then he'd just leave. And he wouldn't come back. The sad thing is that my brother and I, we fell for that multiple times. And every time, he would just walk away chuckling, totally pleased with himself that he had gotten rid of us. Anyway, my childhood was a rough one for a couple of reasons, but not for being left tied up to a tree. For one, I was a pretty sensitive kid. I got picked on a lot. At a young age, I had grown overweight, I wore glasses, and I always wore my heart on my sleeve. I remember a time in the second grade when I overheard a bunch of the kids in my class in Twisp, in a small town, planning to start a gang. And definitely not the Crips and the Bloods, but oh my gosh, it was kind of unnerving for me to hear what they were planning. I was worried about what they were going to do. And I remember the day when we headed out into recess and the gang was there all gathered up, and I watched them head out into the playground. I still remember the tractor tires and the jungle gym and the patchy grass field that we had. And I watched the gang head out there, and at first they pushed this little girl down on the ground, and then they pushed this little boy down on the ground, and I was following along behind, and I'd pick each one of them back up and dust them off and tell them, hey, it's going to be okay. But eventually that gang targeted me, and they came after me. And if it wasn't for a couple of other kids speaking up, it could have gone a lot worse than it actually did. Going home from school was always such a relief from all of the badgering and bullying. The ranch that I grew up on, you know, none of the neighbor kids seemed to take that bullying thing on like the kids at school did. And I can remember watching those kids. You know, we play outside, and I remember when everybody started riding bikes. And if you know anything about the area, it's all dirt roads and all uphill all the time. And I remember watching all of the neighbor kids ride their bikes. I didn't know how to ride a bike yet. And I just told myself, you know what, I really want to do that. Even my younger brother Andy was out there riding a bike already. So I knew I could do it. And I got out there and tried and tried and tried. I spent 45 minutes trying to get that bike riding thing down. And my legs were all scraped up and bleeding from the dirt road, from falling over. But I finally got it. And I was so excited. I was so jazzed that I had learned how to ride a bike. And, you know, when I found out my fourth grade class trip was going to be a bike ride, I was super jazzed because I knew that was something I was good at. And I was so excited to get out there and show the other kids what I could do. Now, I wasn't the fastest kid on a bike, but I could pedal all day long. And I loved, I thought it was pretty macho to put my bike in third gear and always pedal everywhere I could in third gear. I thought that was pretty cool. All the other kids would complain about it, but that was my gear and I owned it. Anyway, so we all piled on the bus for this bike trip, and I remember my teacher, Mrs. DeBrillier, she ushering us all on the bus, and we had thrown our bikes in the back of some pickups, and we headed out, and we went to one of the few places in the valley where there was a long stretch of flat paved road, and we all piled out, got on our bikes, and started pedaling, and we were headed down the road, and I was so excited to be out there, and so excited to finish this trip. And I ended up being stuck, you know, kind of near the back of the troop, not being that fast. And they had these pickup trucks that were following behind us, and you could toss your bike in and hop in the back of that pickup when you got tired out. But I wasn't having it. I wasn't throwing in the towel. I wanted to finish this. And here I was back there, and I was watching the kids one at a time kind of peter out and throw their bikes in and give up, and I was still going. I wanted to finish. Well, after a while, those kids in the back of the truck, well, the truck had pulled up in front of me as if to urge me to give up and to throw in with them. And I wasn't doing it. And it was about that time that the kids started making fun of me. They were like, "Oh, you're too slow. You're too fat. Just give up already." And they just kept taunting and taunting. But I kept going. And eventually we got near the end of the line. And our teacher, Mrs. DeBrillier, she was kind enough to let us finish on the flat part, right before this really steep hill called Meat Market Hill, for the meat market at the top of it. And here I was pedaling up to the end, and something in me just snapped. All that ridicule, all those kids poking fun at me, was just too much. And I didn't stop. And I went right up that hill. And I went all the way over that hill, all the way down into town, all the way through town, to the other side, to my grandparents' house. And I still remember the look on my grandmother's face when she opened that door. She was so surprised, and I just threw my arms around her and cried. You see, while I was growing up, I bought into what those kids said about me. I took what they said to heart. And on top of the constant ridicule at school, my parents were going through a divorce. I let those kids and what was happening within my family convince me that there was something wrong with me. I began to feel worthless, confused, and alone. I shut down. Life had taught me that to be vulnerable, to care about what other people said, to leave myself open to ridicule and hurt was painful and dangerous. I believe that life and experiencing hardship has taught a lot of us to steer clear of vulnerability. It's a weakness after all, isn't it? I have to say that leading our internet connection group has been such a blessing to Jeanette and I. I'm so thankful that God has given us the opportunity to help equip other parents and families to help protect their loved ones in the home. One of the best things about our group has been being able to share our struggles with one another. We've learned a lot about how our faith is still relevant in a world full of technology. What came as a surprise to Jeanette and I was that our internet safety group was just as much a group about parenting as it was anything else. Parenting kids in a modern world is different. Many of us don't put a lot of thought into it. It's way easier to turn a blind eye to the reality that we all know, the reality that everything on the internet, good or bad, healthy or unhealthy, is literally at our fingertips and our kids' fingertips. Here are some eye-opening facts to consider. 81% of kids between the ages of 12 and 17 are on social media. More than half, 54% of them, would say that their parents should be worried about what's going on social media. Nearly one-third of the internet is pornography. You think about all the information that's out there, all the books, the videos, the websites, everything out there. Nearly one-third of it is pornography. And this one really gets me. 1 in 10 kids under the age of 10 will be exposed to pornography, whether it's at home, at a friend's house, or even on the school bus. As parents, just the thought of running through this internet minefield can be overwhelming. But we have to do something. I want to encourage you, if you're thinking about it, to come to our group. We'd love to have you. While our connection group continued to meet, there was a common thread that came to light. The fear that we're doing too little too late. The fear that the damage has already been done. The fear that anger and resentment have already built walls between us and our kids. If we had just known about this stuff a few years ago, we could have made more of a difference. But why? Why do we feel it is an insurmountable task at times to get through to our kids? Why do we find it so hard to communicate with one another when it comes to the sticky topics, the tough stuff, the life-changing stuff, the heartaches? What if our idea of what it is to be parents, what it is to be an authority, was working against us? As parents and as adults, we expect others, especially our own kids, to treat us with some degree of respect. In Colossians chapter 3, verse 20, it says, "Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord." See, it's right there. They're supposed to obey us. Right, honey? But immediately following that verse, it says, "Parents, do not embitter your children, or they will become discouraged." Why would the Apostle Paul follow the respect your parents part with don't embitter your children? What does it even mean to embitter someone? To embitter is to make someone bitter, resentful, or angry. At times we may become embittered by disappointing and unfair experiences. Many of us know life is often difficult, painful, and unfair. So when bad things happen, they can embitter us. And when we become embittered, our mood and our attitude sour. My bike trip in fourth grade embittered me. My parents' divorce and all the other hardships I had growing up embittered me. For some of you, life circumstances have embittered you. And for others, the treatment of a parent, a spouse, a family member, or a loved one has embittered you. At times, I wrestle with the fear that my actions as a parent, could one day embitter my kids towards me. I fear that I could be responsible for closing a door or building a wall that cannot be overcome. No parent ever wants their child to become embittered towards them or towards life. It's never something done intentionally. So what can we do? What can we do to avoid embittering our children? What can we do to tear down walls that may have already been built by embitterment? How can we tackle that anger, that resentment, and that negative attitude head on? In Ephesians chapter 5, verse 21, Paul wrote instructions for Christian households and began by saying, "Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ." Do you think Paul was only talking about the adults in the house when he said that? Surely he wasn't also talking about the kids and giving them the same authority as the adults. I wouldn't want to live in a house like that. I'd rather live in a tent. But that's not what Paul was talking about, what he was trying to get across is that we need to submit to one another, even our children, out of love. But what does that look like? Well, first we need to understand that whether it's out of love or respect or even fear, our children are naturally inclined to put us on a pedestal. What if, in order to submit to our children, we have to step down off that pedestal and be vulnerable? Do our kids know that we're not perfect? I'm sure on the surface they probably do. But they're still naturally inclined to put us on that pedestal. And it's intimidating to them. Do we know that we are not perfect in our authority as parents? Does anyone know who the perfect authority is? Yeah, Jesus. I've often said that being a parent is the most rewarding yet humbling thing I've ever done. I know that I'm not perfect. I know that I don't always make the right call. Sometimes I wish there was a closet where I could just sweep all those mistakes, or a rug I could sweep all those mistakes under so that my kids don't ever have to see them. It's easier to keep speaking to them with authority when I can turn a blind eye to my shortcomings as a parent. What are we telling our kids or one another when we cannot let our guard down and be vulnerable? When was the last time you drug a poor decision into the light and made yourself vulnerable before your kids or before someone you cared about? What if they were able to see that you made mistakes just like them? What if they were able to see that you needed forgiveness just like them? Imagine how disarming that would be for a child who has placed you on a pedestal. If we sin against someone, even our kids, aren't we called as Christians to seek forgiveness from one another? Aren't we called to be vulnerable before them? Aren't we called to be vulnerable before one another? To help explain what I'm trying to say, I want to take a moment to be vulnerable before all of you. I cannot ask any of you to be vulnerable without being vulnerable myself. So Owen, would you come up here? For those of you who don't know him, Owen is such a great kid. I think God just has amazing things in store for him. And I'm so proud of the fine young man that he's becoming. So Owen, I need to ask you a couple questions, and I want you to be totally honest with me, okay?
Okay.
Owen, Do I always treat you with patience?
No.
Do I always treat you with grace?
No.
Do I always treat you with kindness?
No.
Owen, am I a perfect parent?
No. No.
You and I both know that there have been times where I have spoken harshly to you and not treated you the way Jesus would. And I need to ask your forgiveness for that. Will you forgive me?
Yes.
So why is it so important that we be vulnerable? When Jesus spoke about the greatest commandments in Matthew chapter 22, verse 37, he said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself." Loving your neighbor, loving your family, and loving one another is paramount to living out our faith. And to truly love one another, we must also be vulnerable with one another. A few of you may have heard of author Brené Brown. She wrote a book titled Daring Greatly: How the Courage to Be Vulnerable Transforms the Way We Live, Love, Parent, and Lead. In that book, she says, vulnerability is the core, the heart, the center of meaningful human experiences. She defines vulnerability as uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. Think about the vulnerability it takes to love someone, whether it's your parents, siblings, spouse, or close friends. Love is filled with uncertainties and risks. Brown describes vulnerability as the core of all emotions. To feel is to be vulnerable, she says. So when we consider vulnerability to be a weakness, we consider feeling one's emotions to be so too. But being vulnerable connects us with others. It opens us up to love, joy, creativity, and empathy. Some of us think that vulnerability means spilling all our secrets. But vulnerability embraces boundaries and trust. Vulnerability is about sharing our feelings and our experiences with people who have earned the right to hear them. Being vulnerable takes courage, but it's so worth it. Do you think the disciples felt vulnerable when they were out on that little fishing boat in the storm and Jesus was taking a nap? Do you think that Mary Magdalene felt vulnerable when she was washing Jesus' feet with her hair? Do you think the disciples and the apostles felt vulnerable when they knew that proclaiming Jesus Christ as the risen Savior would have them tortured, imprisoned, and even put to death? If you stop to think about it, the Bible is full of believers who made themselves vulnerable before God, before Jesus, and before one another. At some point, most all of us have felt vulnerable before God. When we submit to Him, we know He is all-knowing. We know that He knows everything about us. He knows every one of our secrets, and there is nothing quite like being that exposed, is there? There's nothing quite like being that vulnerable. Consider this. If we were not vulnerable, would we ever want Jesus in our hearts? So I want to kind of conclude by saying that tough experiences in our lives may easily build barriers inside of us. Many of us have had rough childhoods. Many of us have suffered from ridicule, broken relationships, and countless other hardships. There are families out there where expressing your feelings is unthinkable. Many of us have been in or are in relationships where communicating the real stuff is terrifying. You know, my daughter Malia can be a real handful sometimes, but I just love her to pieces. We were having a battle of wills one Sunday morning here at church, and she drew this up. I put my foot down finally, and she was off busy doing something and came back. She drew this up for me, and she handed it to me, and she knew what she was up to. And she was trying to get a real, real nice response out of me, but it said something totally different to me. It said, my daughter feels safe enough to be vulnerable with me. Vulnerable with something that could be damaging or hurtful in some family environments. But we need to be vulnerable like that, even if it takes help. I am blessed to have a wife who has taught me so much when it comes to communicating with our kids and communicating as a family. She has taught me how important it is to keep those doors open no matter what. There are times when she will call me out for being too hard on the kids, and I need that. I do not always handle myself the way I should, the way Jesus would. I do not always have the grace that I should, and it is so important to have someone who is willing to be vulnerable, to speak up and put themselves in the middle of those situations. No matter how difficult it may be, no matter how hard it hurts, no matter how terrifying it may be, we have to find ways to be vulnerable with one another. We need to sacrifice our pride and our fears so we may be vulnerable and submit to our children and to one another out of love. Parents, I challenge you to be vulnerable. Brothers and sisters, I challenge you to be vulnerable. Aunts and uncles, I challenge you to be vulnerable. Grandparents, I challenge you to be vulnerable. Be vulnerable so that you may knock down walls. Walls of fear, walls of anger, and walls of resentment. Be vulnerable so that you may even prevent them from being built in the first place. Be vulnerable so your kids will talk to you about the tough stuff. Maybe it was something they saw on the internet. Maybe it's something they're experiencing on social media. Oftentimes, what they really want most is to talk to someone without fear or harsh judgment. They want to be vulnerable with someone who can be vulnerable with them. We need to be vulnerable with one another so our relationships may grow deeper and more meaningful. You could say that Jesus was the most vulnerable person who ever walked the earth. He chose to be vulnerable for you and for me, for all of us. He knew it was going to happen and even had the power to stop it. But he chose to be vulnerable for all of us. I want to challenge all of you to be vulnerable for Christ and to be vulnerable for one another. Would you close with me in a word of prayer?